Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
So today is a mesmerizing topic, capital gains tax in divorce. Now, many movies have been written about this subject. John Grisham passed the screenplay on capital gains tax during divorce. But we are going to tackle it today, and we're going to make it so exciting.
We are.
Okay, so let's start with, what are we even talking about? What is capital gains? Not a lot of people know. Well, if you earn employment income, you pay employment income tax. So most people get their paycheck, and on their paycheck, it will say these numbers were deducted from the source, CPP, Canada Pension Plan, employment insurance, sometimes health insurance premiums, and then taxes called income tax. If somebody were to, for example, collect rental income, they would pay tax on the rental income. If someone were to have shares of a company and they collected dividend payments on the shares that spin off dividends, they pay tax on the dividends. But what happens when somebody sells either real estate that is not their home, or shares of a company, or some other personal property for a profit? In that case, it's called a capital gain. And the government of Canada doesn't allow any income, except for a few, to go without tax. So they have nicely allowed a type of tax called capital gains tax on anybody that earns a capital gain. But they're more kind than that. They will also equally allow you to claim a capital loss if you sold something for less. So just so that we're clear, viewers, we're not talking about the sale of your home. That doesn't count, because that, if it's your principal residence, is tax-free. But if you have another home, like a cottage or a condo or an apartment building, and you sold it for an amount greater than what you paid, you will have to pay a capital gains tax. Similarly with shares of a company. And then, by the way, the company could be your own company. It could be a company that you own. It could be Townsend Benmore Inc. that we created for a dollar and we sold for $1 trillion. Well, we're going to owe a lot of tax on that company. By the way, that doesn't exist. Don't Google it. So, Leanne, did you want to add anything just by way of background on what capital gains and capital gains tax is?
I don't think so. I think you did a good explanation of what capital gains are. And, you know, it's not something that everybody has to worry about, but it does come up often enough, and it comes up in divorce. So I think you provided a great explanation.
Great. So let's take it to the next level now. So if you earn over about $100,000, $120,000 a year, you're at the highest tax bracket for your employment income, you're going to pay around 50, 54% of taxes on that. Of course, subject to all the other deductions that you might have. For example, if you make an RSP contribution, you're going to have a deduction for that. If you make charitable contributions, you'll have a deduction for that. But for the most part, the very highest level of income tax one pays is on their income, if their income is high. And there's what's called in Canada progressive tax rates. So the lower your income, you're at a lower percentage of tax. And the higher income is, you reach the highest level. Now, there are different tax systems or different tax regimes depending on what the nature of the income is. So, for example, dividend income has a preferred tax treatment over other kinds of profits that are earned. But today we're not talking about employment income. I only use that as a reference point. And we're not talking about dividend income. We're talking about capital gains. So if a couple splits up and they are going to sell the cottage, they're going to claim the home in Toronto as their principal residence, and they're going to sell that cottage. If they bought it for $500,000 and they're selling it for 800,000, that means on paper they made $300,000. If it's all in the wife's name, she would have to declare that income on her tax return for the year in which they sold it, and she would have to pay capital gains tax. There is a preferred treatment for capital gains tax because Justin Trudeau is a generous prime minister. Wrong, because it predated his election. But the tax rate on capital gains is this. You only pay tax on half of your profit. Isn't that nice? Not all of your profit, half of your profit. So if the couple made $300,000, they're going to pay tax on $150,000. So if you pay tax on $150,000 and you're at the highest tax bracket, and by the way, you will with the additional $150,000 on whatever you're earning, you will pay around $75,000 in tax. So to put it in big picture, $800,000 cottage sale, let's pretend there's no mortgage on it, $800,000 cottage sale minus, pretend that cousin Louie was the real estate agent, so he's not charging you a real estate commission. So $800,000 minus $75,000, in your hands, you've got left $725,000. That is as a result of you paying off the capital gains tax. Had you earned that money, that $150,000 as rental income or investment income or employment income, it would have been a lot more, around double. So what happens though, and this is a question for you, Leanne, for the viewers to hear. What happens if the couple says, you know, it's in the wife's name, but we're not going to sell it. We're just going to let the wife keep the cottage and the husband will keep the equal valued Toronto home. They're both worth 800, right? So isn't it a fair deal? He gets the house, she gets the $800,000 cottage. What's your answer?
Well, in that type of situation, there, because of attribution rules and the fact that if it's happening as well in the course of a divorce settlement and whatnot, the wife, if she's the one keeping the cottage, there's not going to be a capital gains tax that has to be paid. So as part of the settlement, it's going to go into her name. The house will be in his name. And it's a way of, I guess, getting around, for lack of a better way of putting it, that having to pay the capital gains tax in that type of situation.
It's technically called a deferral, a tax deferral.
Right. Yeah. Because
it's part of the deal.
And it should also be noted that with respect to capital gains, everyone has a lifetime $100,000 exemption. So depending on where you're at with that exemption, you also may not have to pay the capital gains tax if you haven't used it all up.
So for the benefit of the viewers, the wife getting the $800,000 cottage is the equivalent of her getting $725,000. The husband getting the $800,000 principal residence in Toronto is the equivalent of him getting $800,000. Not fair. So therefore, the husband in that situation would owe the wife the half of the difference in order to equalize. So if she ends up with $725,000 and he ends up with $800,000, the difference is $75,000, he should technically pay her $37,500 so that they are exactly even. That's assuming, of course, there's no other assets and no other debts and no other exclusions and deductions. So I want to be very clear, because the Toronto home is a principal residence, there's no tax payable upon its sale or transfer. There's no even need for a tax deferral. Whereas the cottage, wife will not have to pay a tax because, first of all, in my example, the house is actually in her name. The cottage is in her name. She's not selling it. She's holding on to it. But we had to do a calculation of what the value of the asset is at divorce in order to ensure that they are equal with one another. However, let's flip this on its head. What happens if it's the other way around? The cottage is actually in the wife's name, but she's going to transfer the cottage to the husband. And the wife ends up with the Toronto home. Well, we already talked about the Toronto home being tax-free because there's no tax on sale or deemed disposition. But the cottage, however, by the wife transferring it from her name to the husband, that's considered a transaction. In the normal course, taxes are to be paid at the time of the transfer, not to mention land transfer taxes. However, if the transfer occurs from wife to husband as a result of divorce or separation, and it is covered by either a court order or a written agreement that is in accordance with the necessary language under the Income Tax Act, and that's where you need proper counsel and financial advice. So long as you meet those requirements, the transfer of the cottage from wife to husband is considered a tax-free rollover, meaning there is no tax payable at the time of transfer. And should the husband in the future sell, it's then that he will be dinged for the taxes, not now, because it's a rollover slash tax deferral. And that is available to divorcing spouses in Canada, provided they meet the requirements that I've just described.
And it's very important for people to get tax advice when they're looking at a divorce settlement involving transfer of assets, transfer of pensions, transfer of RRSPs, because oftentimes there are tax consequences and it can affect, as Steve was just touching upon a few minutes ago, the value. So for example, somebody may have a pension or RRSP that they're going to transfer to the other spouse as part of a settlement. And because when that money comes out of the RRSP eventually, there's going to be a tax consequence to it. It's important that that's taken into account when discussing the numbers for the settlement, because it could be very, you don't want to just look at the face value number, because again, because of the tax consequences, the person may be paying more or getting less, depending on the situation, than they're supposed to be pursuant to an equalization payment, because the tax consequences affect things. So it's really, really important with any of these types of transactions that you get good advice, financial advice, legal advice, tax advice when you're considering them, because you don't want to end up thinking that you got a great deal or a great settlement only to find out that you're going to owe $100,000 in taxes that you didn't realize.
And that's a slow creeper, because in our example, whether it's the wife or the husband that kept the cottage, one day it's going to be sold or one day they're going to die. Either way, there's going to be a tax hit. And it's a silence creeper. It's a silent creeper, because it's just going to show up one day. There's going to be a tax bill to be paid. And people are going to be like, well, hold on a second. I thought he got the house, she got the cottage. Why does she have a tax bill? How come he doesn't have a tax bill? And that's because they may have not properly considered the tax implications of the deal. And this is just for the benefit of our viewers, another example of how family law really is the intersection of so many areas of law. And lawyers like Leanne and I, we're forced to know things way beyond family law. We're forced to know corporate law and real estate law and trusts law and tax law and immigration law. And so here's an example of tax law bumping into family law. And what I just described by way of an example on the cottage, by the way, would equally apply to the Florida condo or the investment portfolio or a vintage car, any of these assets. If they increased in value from the date of purchase, they have an embedded profit built into them. And at the time of divorce, we are to calculate the notional tax cost of that profit, and then value the asset after accounting for that tax value. So on our example, 800,000 purchased for 500,000, half of it is taxable, at her tax rate is 75. So 800 now turns into 725. That's an example that could equally apply to any other asset that I've described that is one that could generate a capital gain or does generate a capital gain. And where things get really tricky, because in my example, husband got the house, wife got the cottage. Well, you really think the husband wants to write the wife a check for $37,500? No can do. He would think, you know what, she got the cottage, I got the house. But this is where things get tricky. What if husband says, well, hold on a second. The house in Toronto is 800, yeah. The cottage is 900. Because they can't agree. You know, his real estate agent says it's worth 900. Her real estate agent says it's worth 800. Okay. Well, if it really is worth 900, then that affects the capital gains tax. Because now it's 900 minus 500, which is 400. Half of 400 is 200. The 200 is taxable. Now it's $100,000. And hey, wait a minute. Look what just happened. 900 minus 100 is 800. It's even. He doesn't have to write her a check for $37,500. What a great outcome for him. And that is where Leanne and I live every day.
Exactly. It's, you know, it's a numbers game, and you have to understand the numbers in order to best serve your clients, because, you know, sometimes a small switch like that makes a difference. Sometimes picking your separation date makes all the difference in terms of what some of these values are. And,
especially when it comes to real estate.
Yeah, exactly. What someone might have owed could be very different if you move the separation date around, and an unsuspecting spouse might not realize the consequences of that.
Do you imagine if someone says on that $800,000 house, the cottage, well, it turns out it was worth $1 million a year ago before the real estate market soured. So wait a minute, didn't we separate a year ago when it was worth $1 million? Don't I get half of $1 million now? And the other one says, no. We just separated like 3 months ago, and it's worth $800,000. It's another place where Leanne and I live.
Exactly. Okay.
So for our viewers, I promised you excitement coming out of the Income Tax Act, and I hope I delivered.
I think you did.
But the last thing I want to say is Leanne and I have a lot of education and a lot of insurance, but we're not educated in the Income Tax Act. We're not educated in finance. We're not educated in giving tax advice or insolvency advice. And so anything that we said today was not advice, and there could even be errors in what we said. So if you have a problem that involves taxation, please get proper tax advice from a chartered accountant or a tax lawyer, and don't rely on what we just told you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.